This is the Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing challenges and opportunities in water. In light of three big water deals last week, Keith Hayes and I are going to talk about what it all means, why it might be happening, and sort of the ins and outs of the Innovyze, Aegion, and Forterra deals. So to give a little context, Bluefield has identified, I think, almost 350 acquisitions over the last 12 months. That's a rolling 12 months. So these include acquisitions in technology, hardware, equipment, utilities, and infrastructure, as well as digital solutions. But what's unique about these three deals, I might add, is that they are mostly pure plays, water pure plays, that is. And so, you know, they're big in that respect. Most big deals, I think we've tracked over the last 5 years, 45 acquisitions exceeding $900 million, and that with an average of $3 billion. But when you think about it or look at the details, a lot of these acquisitions are for things other than water. So a good example would be, you know, Danaher's acquisition of Paul several years ago. It was a big acquisition, $13.8 billion. But water only represented a small fraction of that deal. The other aspects of Paul's business included things like life sciences. And in fact, Paul is rolled up into, I believe, Danaher's life sciences group when you look at it as far as how they're structured. So that being said, I thought it would be good to have Keith join us because he works on a lot of deals. He helps companies through their financial due diligence and their, you know, market analysis, trying to figure out, you know, what the landscape looks like before companies either jump into it or in some cases, you know, as they try to sell their business. So let's get to it. Let's jump in with Keith. All right, Keith, how's it going?
Keeping my head up, Reese. It's March. We are heading into an interesting period as always.
Yeah, we got an anniversary coming up. Pick your day. We were talking a little while ago about that. So we're almost, feels like not quite a year into it, at least in the US. I don't know what it looks like in Europe, but we're neck and neck. Let's see where things go. So look, over the past week, we had a couple big deals, three in fact, among others. And one thing that is interesting about these acquisitions was the big, right? So let's just talk basically or lay out sort of the playing field about what we want to discuss today. And that is, what are the deals that we want to talk about, we think are interesting? So the deals that we have, we've got Autodesk made an acquisition of Innovyze for about $1 billion. That's obviously a big tech company buying into water. We had Quikrete buying pipe supplier Forterra for $2.74 billion. So Forterra is a leading player in ductile iron pipe supply in the US, as well as precast concrete. So that definitely strengthens Quikrete's position, who already has a stake in the pipe and hardware infrastructure market. And then lastly, New Mountain Capital acquired Aegion Corporation for not quite $1 billion, $963 million to be exact. So that's a private equity firm that's building on a newfound water position. So tell me a little bit about what's unique or what's different about these deals than what we have seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think the size of the deals is obviously interesting, right? I mean, we see a lot of deals in the less than $200 million range, I would say, you know, established technology providers or service providers or, you know, very small deals looking at investor-owned utility acquisitions. So these are big. These are shifting the landscape of specific segments on the water value chain. So that is important. I think the type of buyers is interesting as well to see. New Mountain Capital, I mean, private equity has looked at the water sector. It's not always clear that the water sector can deliver the returns in the time period that that kind of money is looking for. So to see these types of firms finding a place there, and we've seen that with EQT, which was the previous owner of Innovyze is an interesting one. And then also this idea of trying to diversify a big software firm like Autodesk deeper into the water sector is interesting as well. So I think both on the buyer side, the size of the deals, the timing of it obviously is interesting as well. You know, I think we've spoken internally about, you know, is this a product of the pandemic? Is it digital transformation was going to accelerate and it's been accelerated by the pandemic? And that's why you're seeing greater interest in digitalization of water with types of companies like Innovyze? Or is this simply the macroeconomic cycle? And some of these firms see that it's a cheaper time to buy. So I think that's probably a combination of all those things that makes these deals particularly different.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, I mean, let's talk a little bit about the New Mountain deal with Aegion. Like you mentioned, New Mountain's private equity. They've built out a position in water, which started really not all that long ago, just a couple months ago when they acquired Infomark. But the other thing is, I mean, you say it's hard for private equity firms to get into it. I mean, we've used the analogy of like a barbell. There's a lot of small companies, small opportunities at one end, and then there's some big companies on the other. And many of those big companies, they're not water pure plays. And I think that is one thing that makes these a little bit unique in that, you know, Innovyze is a water solutions provider. You know, Aegion, it's a little bit, you know, they do some energy business, but they are they're what I would call the 800-pound gorilla in cured-in-place pipe rehabilitation market in water. And then Forterra, obviously, is a pipe company. So they're water pure plays. But EQT, they've demonstrated, I think, that they can be successful. I mean, they only acquired Innovyze 2017. They acquired them for $270 million, and they just sold it for $1 billion. So I don't know. Does this feel a little rich to you? Or why would it be so rich at $1 billion?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we were a bit surprised about that valuation. I mean, from what we know about Innovyze's financials around the time of the 2017 deal, I mean, we're probably talking upwards of 20 times EBITDA, which most deals we've seen have been usually around 10 or 12 times. So there's definitely a significant premium in there. It is true that Innovyze is in a unique position in terms of they are pretty much the go-to solution for hydraulic modeling outside of using basically freeware like EPA Net. So unique positioning, but it's a pretty highly penetrated segment. So I think they've definitely done a good job on EQT's side selling the growth story around Innovyze's other products, which have to do with more asset management, optimizing operational decisions with better use of SCADA-based data. So, you know, there's a story there, but still, the price is surprising to us. We have understood that Autodesk is probably looking to compete with some bigger players such as Bentley. And to do that, you're going to need kind of platform acquisition that's going to give you some ballast in terms of customer base, name recognition, and some data assets to build on.
Yeah, I mean, Bentley in and of itself, they just had an IPO, I think it was summertime. So it wasn't that long ago. To the extent, you know, how much better capitalized are they for growth? They're definitely making a push into certain areas, particularly digital twin is a big focus in water. But as far as Innovyze is concerned, now it's rolled up into Autodesk. What does this mean for engineering firms? I mean, aren't a lot of Innovyze's companies already engineering firms? And so does it make that much of a difference?
Right. So I think over half of Innovyze's customer base was engineering firms about 4 years ago. And, you know, several of these engineering firms have been our clients at one time or another, or they are now. And some of them thought it was interesting that Stantec chose to sell off Innovyze after they acquired it from MWH. So they figured, you know, water is moving in the direction of more digitalization. This is a unique company. Stantec was already present in water, they should probably hold on to it. But they sold it, and I think that pretty much paid for the acquisition of MWH overall, which Stantec did. So, though this was seen as one of, I guess, the crown jewels in terms of that deal, and EQT owning it over the last few years hasn't, I would say, fundamentally changed its business model to make it more or less attractive to engineering firms. Could argue that engineering firms are making a push into digitalization. They're still going to need hydraulic modeling tools, which they're offered by Innovyze. There is some overlap, though, in where some of these engineering firms are going with their digital offering. And by that, I'm referring to some of these advanced asset management capabilities that they're building up, where they can do digital twins, where they can mine maintenance data to make investment decisions, and those types of capabilities that firms like Jacobs have been developing with the digital twin, or Brown Caldwell, or CDM Smith, or Black & Veatch, that does start to compete a bit more with Innovyze. And so I think there is going to be a clear, I would say, test for Innovyze's strategy going forward. Can they get the kind of growth that Autodesk paid for just with their existing hydraulic modeling business? Probably not. So all these other capabilities, are they going to face a lot of competitive barriers? And I think that's a space that we're going to be watching pretty closely.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's interesting on the, I believe it was the day of the announcement, was, you know, Innovyze also formed a partnership with Amazon Water. And I admittedly, I don't know all the details. I know some members of our team, they've been talking both to Innovyze and Amazon about what that means. I think it's called 360 Water, it's a water platform, and they're leveraging Amazon's services for that. So Info 360, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, I look at that for, you know, when it comes to growth, you know, is that part of the strategy? Obviously, that was kind of in the making, probably even before this deal. And then the other part of that is, you know, Amazon playing a bigger role in water. I mean, they do have a demonstrated water focus. But I think also the thing about Innovyze is also just had to have been really competitive. I mean, we at Bluefield have been talking about Innovyze for a while as like, hey, this is coming on the block. We've had a number of different companies over the past 12 to 18 months asking about Innovyze. You know, we've done company insights on them. So they came at us from different angles. One was, do you think they're going to be on the block anytime soon? You know, what is their business? What is their business model? How are they structured? Another question we received a lot of was, how did they get to where they are? And that's interesting for really startups, right? So those who are entering the water space with a software or a technology, when you're starting from scratch or with very little, who or which companies can they benchmark as an example for growth? But I think the challenge is, as you well know, is, you know, Innovyze has been around for 25, 30 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long road. And so you're right. I think a lot of startups as big data, artificial intelligence, machine learning, industry 4.0, is all these hype words in a way, or, you know, they're not all hype words, but these are trends that are converging on the water industry, which has led to several startups, whether they're focused on water quality or asset management or optimizing visualization of data. So there are a lot of players out there, you're right, that are trying to figure out, I would say, number one, how to effectively implement an as a service type business model. So moving away from just straight up software subscriptions or doing very customized project work. So how do you come up with a highly profitable and scalable as a service type business? And that's where you may have some kind of hardware, but then you're building a data platform around it, and you're offering the data as a service. So, you know, that's become the mantra of a lot of companies, right? As a service. And then the second thing is, you know, how to scale it. And scale it, there's been a lot of questions around that as well. Is, do you right away go for huge cities? You right away go for New York or London or Chicago? Or do you try and start out with some smaller niches of utilities that could have, that maybe they're less penetrated, that have less resources to do things themselves internally, there may be less integration issues there from legacy systems. So I think how to scale it and how to implement it as a service business has been a huge question, and how did Innovyze solve those? One is, I think that as a service, I mean, they didn't really go all in on the cloud. They really became a tool for engineering firms to do hydraulic modeling projects. Engineering firm might win a city's capital improvement master planning project, and then they spend a year or two studying the condition of their assets, looking the way the water moves around the system. And from there, they use that tool to make recommendations about adding capacity or using different management techniques to those assets. So Innovyze got around the how do we become an as a service. I think early on, they weren't a service. Now they're definitely trying to do that. And I think they're trying to build off of a lot of what they captured from combining hydraulic model data with SCADA data with maintenance data. And from there, they are trying to move more into an as a service model. And it's not quite clear, you know, have they really achieved that yet? And I think that's part of their growth story. In terms of the trying to scale it, though, it was penetrating those engineering companies instead of trying to sell directly to cities, I think, which helped them scale up a lot. Because as we've seen, particularly in the US, the engineering firms do act as very important advisors and in some cases kind of gatekeepers to access those municipal clients. So they may be less prevalent in some smaller utilities. They can't necessarily afford to pay for that. And that's where, you know, there may be an opening there for players to go after smaller tier utilities. So, you know, I think that was what got everybody's attention when Innovyze was acquired at that price. How did they scale? And there were acquisitions along the way. There were a lot of tweaks around the product architecture and also just their relationship with their owner, which was very much at arm's length. So they did provide some of their software to MWH, the engineering company, but they very much had free rein to service competitors.
Yeah, I mean, I think for MWH, it's our understanding that it was a very profitable part of the business, had really good margins within the business. And so it was able to sort of live somewhat independently. And a part of that was just a force of will by the Innovyze management team, it seems, which has long since gone at this point, you know, after, I mean, this is really its fourth owner. It had MWH, Stantec, then EQT, now it's Autodesk. And that's all happened in less than 5 years, I think.
Yeah. It's relevant that you point that out because product integrity, the way that, you know, certain development initiatives within the company have progressed or not, I think are important to consider when you've changed hands. Because a lot of these products that they've developed, I mean, they're complicated. I mean, most utilities, if you want to work with Innovyze's hydraulic model, you basically have to hire somebody full-time who knows how to work this. So it's a complex product. And when you tweak it, when you add modules, when it goes through different iterations of product development teams, that clearly has an impact. So I think that's going to be very important. You know, Autodesk may bring a whole lot of resources to bear on providing more backup and service support and those kind of things to help move them forward towards tapping a bigger market than they have just with the hydraulic modeling.
Well, so changing gears a little bit, these other deals, I don't know to the extent you've looked at the New Mountain Aegon deal or even the Quikrete Forterra. Any thoughts on those?
Well, I mean, I think so. New Mountain is interesting. Well, they've done a pair of deals there, Infomark and Forterra. And I think it speaks to something you were alluding to before, just about how private equity firms are approaching the water space and what kind of deals are they looking for. And ones that are kind of picking off maybe smaller acquisitions on the fringes versus ones that are really trying to build out more of a platform. You know, we saw with EQT acquiring Sinagro and Innovyze and Saur, you know, it seemed pretty clear that they were committed to the water sector, doing pretty large deals from a valuation point of view. And is New Mountain sort of trying to emulate that model? That's one thought that comes to mind. I think also, is the Aegon deal a platform? And my sense is it is, right? I mean, the deal wasn't really about changing something fundamentally about their business model or they couldn't scale. It was really financially driven to take them private, right? And from there, that may give them the runway to develop some initiatives under less pressure, let's say, than if they were on the market.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the case of the Aegean deal, they were already going through some restructuring. And Mario Marchand and I, you know, our colleague, we talked a bit last week because it was the first of these three deals that was announced. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, you know, Aegean has been pulling back somewhat from energy. It does still has its corrosion protection group or that I think has a large footprint in the energy sector, oil and gas. But it's also been pulling back into the U.S. or retrenching in the U.S. from international markets like Northern Ireland, Spain, Australia, I believe. So there's some changes that have already been underway. But what I think is interesting about Newmont, like you said, you know, if you compare it to EQT, I mean, one thing that's interesting about them is they've really targeted services because Aegean, while it does have products and technology solutions, it's really services business. It's in situ form business for pipe, underground pipe rehabilitation, both wastewater and water. I think it's done better in wastewater, but the water rehabilitation of the water market for using trenchless solutions seems to be growing. We've seen definitely other M&A deals with companies like Vortex more active in that space. So my point is the services business of Aegean, as well as, you know, Infomark is a services business too. And they do contract operations for municipalities. So it'll be, like I mentioned this with Marriott, to the extent that, is there any sort of crossover? I'm not so sure about that at this point. But what it does do is it, at least the management team, can they can sort of learn what's happening and see what's happening in the market from one another. So there may be at least some experiential benefits and economies that can be gained. And they're also in the U.S. I mean, I think generally speaking, the U.S. has definite needs for rehabilitation, not only of pipes, but also on the services side. You know, you mentioned the small utilities or systems that may not rely so heavily on like an Innovyze, as you mentioned, because it's complicated. Well, I think Newmont sees through Infomark an opportunity to provide third-party services, economies, and just experience that can be rolled out. Of these three deals, the one that sort of is getting a little bit less attention is a Quikrete deal for Quikrete buying Forterra. Any quick thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously the one I know less about. I mean, Pipe Supply, it's a big group. They've been around for quite a while. And you know, they're doing ductile iron pipe and precast concrete. And, you know, I mean, I think being able to have kind of a portfolio of solutions obviously makes sense. I'm assuming, you know, these companies have probably known each other for quite a while. So the question here is, why now? I think comes to mind, right? I mean, capital investment in pipes doesn't shoot up and down one year to the other, right? Usually this is something that's ticking along at 2-3% a year. Utilities tend to replace anywhere from 0.5 to 0.7% of their miles of pipe per year. So it's a slow growing market, but it's super stable. And, you know, this is a, seems like a pretty clear industrial play. Why now, I think would be my question, maybe that you have more color on, which is, you know, is it, were they able to buy low? Is it, you know, they were in markets that Quikrete is missing right now? That's where I'm not as certain.
Yeah, I think it is interesting in the sense that really, when it comes to ductile iron, you know, that is sort of the established technology or material, particularly for large urban areas, also on the East Coast, largely, not exclusively, but it's just more prevalent there. And, you know, as utilities, they tend to rely on what they know and replace their pipes with what they know. So there are really not a lot of ductile iron players. I mean, one thing about Forterra is, I think my guess is they have 30% market share. I'd have to ask Marielle again, but they're not insignificant. They're a real player in ductile iron market. and they compete with companies like McWane or American Pipe. I mean, those are the big companies. There have been discussions about, you know, has Forterra been, you know, squeezing the others on price and creating more problems for them? You know, it's kind of a, I don't know if this is the right way to put it, sort of an old boys club, right? These guys have been, you know, working deals. They know one another really well. They compete against one another. It's a small group. And market entry is really hard to do. So to get into it, you basically have to buy one of these firms. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that space. I mean, you know, but I think, you know, to your question about sort of what's driving all of this, I mean, look, aging infrastructure is real. It's not going away. I think we say it over and over again. What'll be interesting for the ductile iron players, though, you know, it are the capital improvement plans or budgets for these cities post-COVID. We're still kind of trying to figure out how states are doing, how cities are going to do. And there's always a lag. And I'm not sure we've quite seen the lag. I mean, economically speaking, I think the U.S. appears to have done fairly well in some respects. Industry is definitely starting to rebound. But, you know, capital improvement plans, we've definitely seen a downtick last period, but going forward for the larger cities in the U.S., we're going through another batch right now, our analysts are. So we'll see if those reveal any sort of downturn, but it might be until July if we really see anything at all.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the other shoe hasn't dropped. I think it's pretty clear in terms of what's going to happen macroeconomically. Things don't look as bad as they were before. I mean, it's been very unique, right? And I think we were talking the other day about, you know, you find it instructive to look at previous crises or events that cause a huge drop in markets, but no two are exactly alike, right? And, you know, the last one was more driven by collateralized debt obligations and subprime mortgages, let's say. This one has absolutely nothing to do with that. So as much as we want to read the tea leaves looking at the past, that doesn't really work here. And essentially what happened was demand was choked off very quickly through different measures. And now that that chokehold is loosening, there wasn't anything fundamentally wrong per se in some of these industries. So it looks promising. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, let's try and find the silver lining on all this. I mean, I think we definitely have, talking about digital transformation, the aging infrastructure issue and climate change and trying to build back greener and that kind of thinking is probably positive for the water industry. So I think there's reason to be optimistic, and it could be also one of the drivers behind why these deals have even happened.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think people, the interest has definitely picked up. So, and I, you know, we haven't even talked about and save it for another day, and that is Texas. You know, there's a real climate issue there. And speaking of broken pipes and infrastructure rehabilitation, there's no place like Texas right now that needs it, right? I mean, there's still people without water. And so the question is, what does that mean? And I think it's someone, I was listening to something the other day, and it's basically in the US, if not the rest of the world, developed world, that is, we have, you know, 19th, if not 20th century infrastructure, but we've got 21st century problems that weren't anticipated. So how that plays out, who knows, right? But all I know is that water is playing an increasing deal. And I think people see that as an opportunity. I think as you alluded to and something you put together recently, it's like addressing water is good for business, particularly if you have a green strategy for your business. By that, I mean corporate sustainability. You know, it's not just about carbon. It's not just about renewable power. It's more of a portfolio of climate-related issues. And one of those is water.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And probably beating a dead horse, but I think we've said this time and again, the water industry's challenges aren't really about technology. There is great technology out there. And again, these deals, I think, have recognized there's good technology there, but for these markets to really grow, it has to do a lot with what happens on the policy side, which can channel financing for projects and can also make, you know, new regulations that will drive better compliance and improve the environment. So it's all interconnected.
Nice. All right. Well, let's call it quits for the day. So thanks again. I know this is pretty short notice for jumping on. You know, we've had some of these conversations over the past couple of days. So I know we decided, hey, we should share some of our thoughts. I mean, this is what we think about when we think about water, but also how we help companies address it. So thanks again. And let's talk soon.
All right. Take care, Reese.
All right, man. Cheers. So before we sign off, please give us a rating and subscribe to Future Water Podcast. You can do it on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Sorry about that. You can do it on Spotify and other podcast platforms. Separately, send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com and give us any topic or ideas that you'd like us to discuss. It can be fast. It can be long in the planning, but any ideas are good ideas for us. Thirdly, tell a friend about it. We'd like you to share this with your friends. And, you know, it's a good time, like I always say, it's a good time to reach out to a friend. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, go to bluefieldresearch.com. Take care.